It's official. Our book, Clarity Intelligence, The Missing Logic in Leadership, is available for purchase in bookstores today. If you didn't pre-order a copy, please go out and get one as soon as possible. Polarities are all around us in our homes, our work environments, in our communities, and our countries, and even in us. And if you don't recognize them, understand how they work on you and around you, and don't know how to leverage them, they will haunt you. Polarities will keep showing up in your life as persistent, unsolvable problems. Having this awareness and knowledge compels us to share it with leaders like you around the world. We believe polarization we've experienced in our homes and schools and communities and even our world would shift if every leader became polarity intelligent. It is an essential competency you can't afford to overlook. Start your journey today toward becoming polarity intelligent. Get your copy of Polarity Intelligence, The Missing Logic in Leadership, wherever you get your books. This is the True Leader Podcast. Today, our special guest is Jimmy Burrows. Jimmy is the author of Beat Burnout. And in our interview, we talk about how you as a leader can prevent or beat burnout that's escalating in leadership today. So don't miss it. Welcome to the True Leader Podcast. I'm Dr. Tracy Christofferson.
And I'm Michelle Trocet.
We are life and business besties, leadership coaches and mentors, and polarity intelligence experts. We're the authors of Polarity Intelligence, The Missing Logic in Leadership, and co-founders of Missing Logic.
We are here to help high-achieving leaders break through leadership norms that cause them suffering at work and home. If you're looking to elevate your leadership, increasing your productivity, effectiveness, and impact, and manage your health and well-being, spend quality time with those you love, and live your best life, then you are in the right place.
Our goal in this podcast is to equip you with new ways of thinking and practical and tactical strategies for succeeding at work and thriving in life. Think of this podcast as your weekly dose of personal and professional development so you can reach your full leadership potential, create a life you love, and be what we are calling a thriving, resilient, and unstoppable or true leader.
If you are ready to learn and laugh a little, let's get started. Welcome to the True Leader Podcast with Michelle
and Tracy.
Welcome back. Welcome back.
Yeah, here we are in the studio having a good time.
That's right. If it's your first time here, welcome.
Welcome. We're always happy to welcome new people.
Oh, absolutely.
New listeners, new guests.
Yes, today we had a new guest.
Yes, it was kind of fun.
It was.
Yeah, this is one of those kind of, you know, just kind of people reaching out and saying, hey, you know, you want to be on my podcast? And well, yeah, you want to be on our podcast?
Podcast dating.
It is. It's kind of podcast dating, right? People are always, well, you know, people are always looking to share their expertise and, and to have people on their podcast to share their expertise. So that's a little behind the scenes things that happen, right? And how we get guests and how we show up on other podcasts and, yeah, you know, you end up in some common communities and connecting and, you know, seeing your differences and where you're aligned and looking for ways to network and connect and share.
That's right. One of the things that Tracy and I like to do is we like to have meet and greets with other podcast guests so we really can get to know each other. And we met our guest, Jimmy, and oh, yeah, he was a fit.
Oh, yeah. Well, a lot of alignment, a lot of alignment. And we just had a really, really nice conversation with him. And, you know, he wrote a book as well. And we just wrote a book. And so just kind of, you know, sharing what's in his book and talking about all the things that he's been learning. And it's just had a really kind of a great journey. And it was fun to hear that. And I think what I appreciate is, you know, we all come at this work that we do based on our experiences and what's informed us and what we've observed and what we know and how we can apply what we know. And so it was really fun to talk to him about his experiences, how it's informed what he's done.
Yeah. Helping leaders.
Helping leaders. Yeah. We're all about helping the leaders. Hear that, leaders? We're all here to help you and support you, right? We really need really great leaders. Mm. And we're all here to support and help people become great leaders, right? Mm-hmm. In our case, true leaders. So let me tell you a little bit about Jimmy Burrows. Now, Jimmy is on a mission, just like we are.
Yeah.
Right? He's on a mission to change the way we lead teams. And he said years of experience as an officer in the British military and a track record of success as a people leader in top global organizations. Jimmy knows what it takes to build a high-performance culture that delivers results. He realized that traditional approaches to leadership and high-performance team programs were leaving leaders and teams burned out, disengaged, and underperforming. So that is the essence of his work. Mm-hmm. Now, outside of work, Jimmy splits his time between living at the beach, scuba diving. Now, that sounds really challenging, Jimmy.
I know.
I don't know, you know. And in Central Mexico, nonetheless, hill running and while constantly searching for his next property project with his partner and dog. So, wow. He's very diverse.
He is.
He is very diverse. And so without further ado, here's our interview with Jimmy Burrows. Well, welcome everybody to another episode of the True Leader Podcast, and welcome, Jimmy. We are so excited to talk with you today.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity to be here.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, we've been looking forward to it. Very much so. So I'm going to kind of kick us off a little bit, and I think it'd be really great for our listeners, because I'm sure they're going to want to know about your journey. Like, you've had quite a journey. You went from a British Army officer to corporate training to the CEO of a company that focuses on high performance leadership coaching. So, wow, what led to that journey?
That's a big question. You know, if I go back to the very start, and then I'll pick out some highlight moments that I think will possibly resonate with various people, various listeners. When I finished university, the British Army was a relatively peaceful stage, and so I decided that I wanted to go off to Sandhurst, which is the UK equivalent of West Point, and gain some leadership skills, learn what being a leader was all about. And, you know, arguably Sandhurst is probably one of the best leadership training institutions in the world. You get 44 weeks, 20 hours a day, 6 days a week for young men and women to focus entirely on building their leadership capability. And all of a sudden, in the middle of that, 9/11 had just happened, but in the middle of that, Iraq happened. And you can imagine being a young 23-year-old, being told, when you finish your training, you're going to be going to Iraq. The regiment's already left. You're going to go to Germany, get some stuff, and then go to Iraq. And I thought, well, that sounds fun. What the reality was turned up to basically an empty army base, had to scrabble around to try and find any kit because everything had gone to war, then took a commercial flight to Kuwait and hitchhiked into Iraq. So hitchhiked into a war zone at the age of 23 to be met by all of these people who, even though maybe they were only a couple of months older than me, looked like men to my boy. They'd been through this war. They'd been through battle. They'd been through sleepless days. And I was turning up fresh and shiny out of the box. And I remember this feeling of imposter syndrome. And it's something that stuck with me for many years. And if I fast forward now 20 years, one of the things we see with a lot of leaders that we work with is there is a definite linkage between those leaders who are experiencing imposter syndrome and those who burn out. What we also see is the ones who are struggling with imposter syndrome and those who are burning out tend to be the highly engaged, highly intelligent, highly capable ones. So there's a linkage there as well. And this, over the course of the last 20 years, as we've run the consulting business for the last seven years, but also previously when I was working in business as a GM and before that in the Army, I was always fascinated by what made high performance happen. And so each of the sort of pieces of my career as I've gone have always been in the pursuit of high performance. First of all, building a high performance military unit, then building high performing teams through my corporate career, and now helping organizations to build high performing teams. specifically focusing on the leader and how they lead that team. But it still amazes me that every single one of them I go to, I would say 90%+ of the leaders are high performance anxiety, imposter syndrome, very smart, very engaged, very motivated, very determined, and almost burning themselves to the ground because they're trying to carry a lot. So that's really where my, I guess there's a few sort of snippets of my career there, but it's, that's why, the story of why I've done what I've done is because I'm genuinely interested in people, I'm genuinely interested in high performance, and it was how do we link those two and basically make up a job for myself.
And it looks like you've done a good job.
I mean, I feel very blessed and lucky. I can't argue.
Well, and I love it. I love that it's really kind of come from your observation and high level of curiosity, right? Like, what is this about? It's kind of like, what's making these leaders tick? What's making these teams tick? And how, what can we learn from it? So I really appreciate that curiosity that's been driving your journey.
Yeah. And just the experience too, like you've been there. So there's coaches that haven't been there and there's coaches that have been there. So that really speaks volumes as well. So I really appreciate that. Mm-hmm. And you know, one of the things
it's
you said about
you brought
burnout,
up the word curiosity, I don't know if you believe in the concept of curiosity, but it's something we actually preach and teach. And one of the chapters in my book, which I'm sure we'll come to later, is all about the idea of exploration. But essentially it's curiosity dressed up in a new dress. Because if you're not curious, then you're standing still or you're going backwards because the river of life is flowing past you. So you've got to be curious. You've got to go and try new things. And it's one of the high performance differentiators that we see in leaders. And I guess the reason we put it into our stuff is because it's been useful for us as business owners and as leaders previously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that kind of aligns with an abundance mentality as well, right? Versus a scarcity, a fear mentality. It's really kind of an abundance, kind of, you know, willing to take risks, willing mm-hmm. to learn more and explore more and take chances. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. Yes. I feel like you're just giving my book back to me in many ways. chapter two of the book is all about abundance. And, you know, it's probably worth us explaining what abundance means, because I think to many people it's, you know, crystals and meditation and manifestation. And yes, you know, do you know what? For some people, those are absolutely the important factors. If we put a more commercial lens on it, The difference between scarcity and abundance is the scarcity executive or the scarcity leader is worried about the restructure, is worried about budget cuts, is worried about losing resource, is fighting with their peers to get their project to the top of the pile so they get the staff or the budget that they need. The abundant leader knows, intuitively knows, that there's enough to go around. And that there'll be, if, you know, as long as we perform, there'll be something good at the end of it. Mm-hmm. Even if that's just a lesson, but we're going to gain from this experience. There's going to be enough budget because we're going to find that money by doing something smart. Mm-hmm. So it's not woo-woo crystal healing in the commercial sense. It's actually playing a smart game, but being abundant enough to not live in a fearful place. Mm-hmm. And we often see this with leaders when we start working with teams is, you know, oh, well, those people over there are really bad and they're causing all of our problems, or those people up there are causing all of our problems. You know, it's the boss or the teams next to us. And that's a very scarcity mindset, mm-hmm. because eventually you go into this defensiveness where my monkey tribe is better than your monkey tribe, so we're going to be enemies, when that doesn't really work in modern business. You have to be integrated horizontally and vertically mm-hmm. and diagonally, you know, inside and outside your business mm-hmm. to get the best results. So approaching that with an abundance mindset is absolutely going to give you the best results.
Yeah
so important.
Mm-hmm.
So you mentioned burnout, Jimmy. And Tracy and I have also been working with leaders to prevent burnout. And, you know, what is your burnout story and why did you write the book Beat Burnout?
Yeah, it's not a happy story, unfortunately. It has a happy ending, but it's not a happy story. And if we rewind the clock to 2016, I was running a business in New Zealand. And we were like a small independent business inside a bit much bigger business. So about a $40 million P&L responsibility, team of about 40 or 50 people. We were operating in 26 countries, I think. So I was traveling an awful lot between those countries, about 10 days out of 14 living in hotels. The same time as I was getting my head around this job, and I was about 15 years younger than anybody else at the senior leadership table, the executive team transitioned my leader three times. So my first leader left, my second leader left, and I ended up with my third leader. And as those of you who are listening who know what happens when you get a new boss, you kind of have to step up and impress them again and build relationships, and it destabilizes you slightly. But also it means that your purpose, your clarity of purpose, can become a little bit derailed. And that was one of the things I really struggled with. It's, you know, the first boss would say, go and put your energy here, then go and put your energy here, then go and put your energy here. And so I was like, well, what's the point in all this? What am I actually trying to achieve? That became very evident to me. Gradually, my peers were also leaving. So it became very difficult to create a connected network because everybody who I had an alliance with or had influence with would leave and you'd have to start again. Mm-hmm. So it became very, very tense and challenging. And then we had a situation where the executive team started to change lots of things at the same time. So we changed the way we acquired customers. We actually outsourced it with no outsourcing process. So it was essentially a baby got dropped. We changed the way that staff delivered the product. So the way the customers were served completely changed, turned on its head. The asset footprint for the organization was completely changed. So we went from lots and lots of small buildings to a couple of big buildings. But again, that was happening at the same time as everything else. And then the final kicker for me was my business was directly reliant on overseas income. And the government of New Zealand made a decision which in overnight took $20 million off my bottom line. And our business was essentially the cash cow for the larger business. And the CEO called me in and said, Jimmy, you need to work out a way of fixing this because that's $20 million off our bottom line, but don't do anything too risky. And so I was heaped up with this huge responsibility, but given no freedom and latitude to do something, to be innovative or creative. And this is one of the common threads we see with people who are burning out, is that they've got massive responsibility or accountability and very little ability to deliver it, not through lack of skill, sometimes through lack of skill, but more often than not because they're derailed or stymied by something else in the organization, politics, lack of budget, lack of resource, lack of time, whatever it might be. And in the 2.5 years I did that job, I didn't take a day off. So it was never off work. Even when I was on leave, I would be going back to the UK to visit parents. I would work through the night to be online for New Zealand. And I would be with my family during the day in the UK. When I was overseas, I'd be waking up at 4 a.m. to do my board papers and get my responses to emails. And then I'd be in meetings until 10 o'clock that night. Then we'd be flying to the next city, checking in at the hotel 1, 2 a.m, sleeping for a couple of hours, and then going to the next day's meetings. And you know what? I got to this point where it was about 2016, and I remember sitting on the edge of my bed at home. I had drunk a bottle of wine the night before because I was trying to slow my whirring brain from all this stress. And I remember saying to myself, Jimmy, if you keep going like this, you're either going to kill yourself or you're going to make a big mistake that you can't get yourself out of because you notice that you're getting tireder and tireder. And so I said to myself, you need to leave, you need to get out, and you need to work out why this happened, and you need to do something about it. So that's where, I guess, JBL came from, was that initial birthplace was me sitting on the edge of the bed going, this cannot go on. And it was interesting that over time, I started to repair myself, and I spent about probably 3 or 4 months thinking, what happened? Why did this happen to me? And what were the trigger things that I was doing or others were doing around me that caused this? And do you know what? Most of it was the choices that I was making, which was very interesting. It was my decision to work late, my decision to be online all the time, my decision not to take leave. And we see this with, again, burnout, highly engaged, highly capable, highly motivated people with a little bit of imposter syndrome. They do more than they should all the time, and they dive into their energy bank account or overdraft all the time. Mm. And they never quite pay it back. And it gets worse and worse and worse until they're bankrupt. And that's, I'll come back to that theme. And so that was really where the business started, was as I was traveling around Latin America on my journey of recovery and self-discovery, I started bumping into lots of entrepreneurs, lots of leaders, lots of people who were taking sabbaticals, lots of people who were just taking some time out because they burned out. And I talked to them and I asked them, what happened for you? What was going on? Why did you burn out and what caused it? And the pattern was there. And so it helped to corroborate a lot of the things that I'd felt and noticed, but it started to become a body of knowledge. And eventually many of those conversations turned into client engagements. Hey, I've got a job as a CEO, managing director, GM, whatever it is. Could you come in and talk to my team about what you're up to? So that turned into work. And then I thought, oh, there's probably a business here. So we started the business and we've not looked back. And fast forward another few years to last year, where we wanted to try and take this message of what are some of the things that if teams do prevent burnout, if they don't do cause burnout, and get that down into one document, get that down into, initially it was just going to be a white paper. And as we started writing, it just kept coming and kept coming and kept coming. And that was what ended up being the book, Beat Burnout, was really a, how do we help teams that we can't necessarily work, because we can't work with everybody with the best will in the world. We try, but we can't. How do we connect with a team where there's a leader who's going, oh my God, I don't know what to do with my team. And we're all burning out and I'm exhausted, and go, well, here you go. Here's like a recipe book for making some change. And if you just follow the steps in the book, which we elaborate on with some stories, but just follow the steps, we make it easy for you. And that was the reason behind the book. It was trying to expand our ability to touch more people who are struggling with this, knowing that a lot of people are struggling with this.
Yeah, it is pervasive, that is for sure. And it's always amazing to me how far we push ourselves before we are, you know, just really in that negative place, being burned out. And the work that Tracy and I do, we really help leaders know how to dynamically balance their professional life and their personal life, and have learned how important it is to pay attention to those early warning signs. But all too often people, like you said, I just power through it. I power through it, and they ignore them, and then they really end up severely burned out.
Yeah, and I think, too, the other thing that we've found is there's a lot of leadership norms that people feel they have to follow, right? Yeah. Which helps them, which leads to them feeling like they don't have a choice, right? Like, this is what every other leader does. I got to follow the leaders in my organization. I can't stand out. I can't be different. Like, I got to follow, you know, the path of those before me. This is what I've been taught by the leaders that, you know, helped me climb the ladder. And this is how it's done. And this is the way it is. And so they get kind of caught in that rut as well. And then I think that also has a significant you know, impact. And then I think one of those ruts is that everybody before me, where self-care becomes, you know, non-existent, and you're everything and everybody first and I'm last. And I think that contributes as well to that burnout.
You've hit some great reasons on the head there. I absolutely agree with you. I think the other two that we've seen that would build on what you've said, and they're all extremely aligned with our thinking. The other two that we've seen are, we've been in a generation now of continuous improvement, whether it's Toyota Production System or Lean or Six Sigma or Theory of Constraints or Agile or whatever you want to use as the latest thing. We've basically spent 25 to 30 years fixing all the easy stuff. So we fixed, let's outsource stuff. We fixed, let's digitize stuff. We fixed automating stuff. But we haven't fixed the really tough things, which is people. And so people are still basically wired like Victorian factory workers, or if you go back even further, like cavemen. Our brains are essentially the same as the caveman. We're a little bit more sophisticated in terms of our language and some of our behaviors, but the neural wiring is basically the same. But we fixed all these other things and we've left the tough stuff, which is how do we deal with people and how do we interact with people? And you layer on top of that a generation of underinvestment in leadership and stripping out management layers in organizations. And we wonder why we've got a problem. So you've got these really complex problems to solve that involve people, and people are extremely complex, and a generation of underskilled leaders whose only example of leadership was their boss, who's also not been trained in leadership. And when I say not been trained in leadership, most people go through a management 101 course and then get an executive coach. And there's this 20, 25 year gap in the middle where they kind of just wing it and make it up as they go. And if they're lucky to have a good example of leadership, then they're a good leader. If they have a bad example of leadership, generally they're a bad leader. Yeah. And we wonder why we've got a problem. You've got people who are doing their best, but with a really empty toolbox.
Yeah, I would agree. Mm-hmm. I would agree. That's so true. So let's talk a little bit about your book, because I think you touch on some of these things as well, right, in the book. And you actually have a framework that you reference in the book. And so that is the PACED framework, so PACED. So why don't you just kind of give our listeners like a high-level overview of those elements of the framework and how that supports these high-performing, you know, organizations or cultures?
Yeah, no, more than happy to. If I can paint a picture in your mind of, if we go back to the 1980s, we're talking the stereo system that was in your lounge with the graphic equalizer on the front, and you could, yeah, you know, dial up the bass, or you can go to plus 10 or minus 10, mm-hmm, and you could dial up the treble plus 10 or minus 10. For our younger listeners, we're talking about the EQ settings on Spotify. Same thing. You can change the sound. What we looked at when we were doing all of these conversations, which then subsequently turned into a whole research project about burnout, was that there were five key elements that if they were up to plus 10, you had a really high performing culture in that organization. If more than two of them were in the minus zone, there were signs and symptoms of burnout, which were limiting the performance of that business. And so the goal of the book was to essentially describe what each of those five things were and then show leaders in very simplistic terms, i.e. say this, ask this, do this, how to create the plus 10 state. So I can whiz through them very quickly. We'll go a little bit deeper on a couple. The first one is purpose. And this was a standout factor when it came to high-performing teams. Was if I paint an analogy in your mind, we've got the Oxford to Cambridge boat race, which is a very famous rowing race in the UK. And in one boat, we've got eight rowers who were all extremely strong. Unfortunately, the cox is sick that day. And so the team is just going to do their best. And they're all going to row as hard as they can. But some of them are sitting forwards in the boat. Some of them are sitting sideways in the boat. Some of them are sitting backwards in the boat. And some of them are rowing on the same side. Some of them aren't. And this boat has a lot of energy exerted in it, but it doesn't go anywhere, or it goes in circles. And everybody gets really frustrated because they're not winning the race. And so they try even harder to win the race, but they're just not getting anywhere. The other team is very clear. I'm on the left, I'm on the right, I row on one, I row on two, and we're going for the finish line. They've got a very clear purpose, and they're very aligned in that goal. And of course, they're going to win. And when we go into organizations and we say to teams, what's your purpose? What's the purpose of your role? What's the purpose of this team? And what's the purpose of this organization? Often there's a complete lack of clarity on what those things are. And we'll go a little bit deeper on the team one, because it's the one that's sort of really interesting. Is I've worked with many teams where you say, what's the purpose of the team? Are you sure about it? And they're like, oh yeah, we don't need to work on that. We're really clear. Okay, cool. Okay, well, everybody grab a post-it note, write down, what's the purpose of this team? And you get 20 different answers. And they might be similar, but they're not the same. And the consequence of that is, if you can imagine, I'm going to row just a millisecond or two after you, or I'm slightly orientated differently in the boat to you, but just by a couple of degrees, the boat is not going to go as fast. It's not going to be as efficient, and it's not going to win the race as effectively as a team where everybody's aligned saying the same thing. Mm-hmm. And I can give you a specific example. I worked with a pharmaceutical team, a team in a pharmaceutical business, and they were a sales team. And I said, what's the purpose of this team? And they said, well, our job is to maximize customer satisfaction, to sell product, to keep the warehouse empty so the manufacturing team have to work harder. To meet our customers' expectations, to build relationships, to sell product, to make margin, to make profit. And when we look at all those, yes, they are all things the team has to do, but what's the specific purpose? Because when we have a specific purpose, we make decisions aligned with that purpose. We prioritize aligned with that purpose, and we allocate resources aligned with that purpose, as opposed to everybody pulling as hard as they can in their own direction, hoping the boat's going to go faster. So that's the first one, is purpose. The second one we kind of went into a little bit earlier, which is the concept of abundance, where we have to believe and we have to know and we have to do the right things to get the positive outcome to happen versus living in fear and imposter syndrome and scarcity. The third piece of the book is all about connection. And there's a few sections in each of the chapters, but one I'll draw out here is the idea of connecting people to your business. If you want a high-performing team, you need to make your team sticky. So if you're a team where people are leaving and turning over all the time, it's very hard to be a high-performance culture because you're constantly recruiting and onboarding and grieving when people leave. Mm-hmm. Far better to create good onboarding programs, good development and retention programs. And so we do a lot of work with organizations specifically in that space around how do we create really effective, low effort, high impact onboarding programs. Because most onboarding programs that we see are death by PowerPoint that nobody pays attention to, or everything on day one, complete overload, or nothing. And very little alignment and organization behind the scenes. And so we go, well, we can turn that on its head and we can help managers do a better job. So that's the third one. The fourth one is all about exploration. We talked a little bit about that earlier, which is go try new things. Don't wait until you're certain. Run some experiments. Don't dip your toe in the water. Carve off a piece and do a pilot somewhere and go all in on that pilot. And try and break the pilot. Try and make it fail and learn some lessons from it. So explore and learn is the key message of the fourth chapter. And then the fifth chapter is all about the idea of downtime. And again, multiple sections, but the one I'll draw on here is it's not just about switching off your laptop and watching TV. We have different types of ways that we need to create downtime, and the book goes into a lot more detail, but the one I'll draw out is preparation to perform. So there's a great example that we use, which is the Harvard basketball team, and they split the team into two. And they said, team, group A, you're going to be training as per normal and carry on as per normal and do everything. And let's see your results at the end of the season. Group B, one day a week, you're not going to train, but you are going to meet with a dietitian. You're going to meet with a physio. You're going to meet with your tutor at university. And we're going to see how you perform over the season. Fast forward to the end of the season. I'm sure we can work out which group performed better. It was obviously group B. Otherwise, the story would be rubbish. But they outperformed the group A by over 20%. And the reason for this was they were doing what you would term as downtime, but it was preparation to perform. It was getting their ducks in a row. It was organizing their minds. It was organizing their bodies. It was getting their diet sorted. It was taking a little bit of a rest. That allowed them to perform at a higher level through the rest of the week. So that's the book.
That's incredible.
It is.
It's really, yeah. I love how you've kind of framed that up. And there are, it just, you know, well, of course, it makes total sense to us.
No surprises here.
No surprises for us. Like, you know, having worked with leaders as well, right? These are some of the things. And again, then it's about how do we do this with the team, right? So it's like you said, you can't get to every person. And I think one of the polarities that, you know, we have really been trying to bring to light when it comes to the whole burnout scenario is that it's individual and organization, individual and team, right? Because you can put all these things in place as a leader in an organization, but each individual person has a accountability and responsibility to their own health and well-being at the same time, right? So you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make them drink. You can't make them take care of themselves. You can't make them, you know, take this, leverage this kind of downtime to enhance their performance. So it really is the both and to have the structures, the processes, the abilities within the organization to create a culture that enables this for the individual to then step up and to do their part, right? To it's just like the individual's in the boat, right? So you've got to kind of align with that ability. Now, if that structure's not there, the culture's not there, it makes it 10 times as hard, I think, to do this for yourself individually. So you have to find the culture that will fit.
Yeah, and I think I there's think such you've, power
you've,
in...
You've drawn on an extremely important idea, which is when you meet people who are burning out, I think I said to you this earlier, it's their choices that are causing a lot of this stuff. But oftentimes they'll be saying, oh, well, if there was less work to do, if my boss gave me less to do, if there weren't so many projects, if there weren't so many priorities, if I didn't have all these things on, if these people would perform better. And it's not because they are trying to blame. It's because it's very difficult to see that I'm the problem. I'm the one who's making some of these choices, and I've got some habits that are counterproductive for me. Yeah. And so it's easier to point the finger externally. That being the case, you're the leader of the team. If you're listening to this podcast, you're the leader of your team, your family, your church group, your sports team, whatever you are involved in. Even if you're just leading two people or one person or yourself, it's important that you start to make the change so you get the different outcomes.
Yeah, that's right. And then you lead better, right? You're leading by example, but also, yeah, right. You have more energy, you have more stamina, you have more, right? And you're going to, and when you change the things you see, you know, the things, everything changes, mm-hmm. right? When you, mm-hmm. when you change your perspective, then the things around you also change. So
100%, 100%.
Yeah. Yeah. And I, what I was going to say too is, The you can't change everything. So what I really appreciate about your framework is you're zeroing them in on the few things that are going to make the biggest difference too. Yeah. That's also really helpful when you're trying to live, you know, get out of burnout and stay out of burnout. So mm-hmm. that's really awesome.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And the way we wrote the book was in a specific order, not just so we had a nice word, mm-hmm. but actually it was in a specific order. So if you're a leader who is struggling with this and you want to change the culture of your team, start with purpose, mm-hmm. then move on to abundance, then focus on connecting, then get more explorative, and then do downtime. Mm-hmm. Because sure. the obvious thing that people say is, oh, you're burning out, take a vacation. And unfortunately, if you're standing in the middle of a thunderstorm getting soaking wet and you come in and dry off and then you go outside again, you're going to get wet. Because yeah. the conditions haven't changed. And if you're going on a vacation for 2 weeks, you might come back feeling refreshed, but you're going straight back into that thunderstorm of lack of purpose, lack of abundance, lack of connection, lack of exploration, and you're just going to burn yourself out again. Yeah. And that's what we often see is people kind of the glutton for punishment. They first of all, they use the evening, then it's the weekend, then it's a week off, then it's stress leave, then they quit. And that's how they overcome the exhaustion cycle. But it doesn't actually fix the conditions that they're, which is the choices they're making.
Right. And then they just go on to someplace else and make the same choices and end up in the same spot, right? Yeah.
You'd be amazed how many people who are serial burnout artists.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Jimmy, what are some of the trends that you've seen in the post-pandemic in work cultures? And as a follow-up question to that as well, where should the attention of leaders be in support of positive work cultures? What are you seeing?
Yeah, that's a really good question. You know, I think the biggest trend we've got right now, I mentioned earlier, is this generation of underinvestment in leadership. And where we've been putting our energy for the last year and what's going to be the focus of our second book is essentially leaders who are in leadership roles who are still acting like managers because they're underskilled or undertrained. You get a real challenge when you lack leadership. And obviously we speak the language of leadership, and there's a difference between management and leadership. The very simplest way of boiling it down is managers manage tasks and checklists. Leaders lead people. And we talked earlier about the complexity stuff, the fact that people are complicated and it takes a whole different skill set. But there's many people who are in very senior roles who've got this lack of leadership capability, not because they are bad people or because they're trying to do a bad job, but because nobody's invested in them over time. Or they believe that they're now too senior in their career to do professional development. So that ship has sailed and, you know, we just make do with what we've got. So we see this real trend at the moment, and I think it was Gallup or maybe it was. Well, I need to just think about that. Anyway, there's a really good piece of research, and I'll see if I can dig it out. But it essentially said that there's a 16 to 26 year gap in most leadership training between management 101 and executive coaching, and we don't have anything to fill the void. Mm-hmm. So we're seeing this as a real trend, and it's because of this stripping out of leadership layers, not having good examples to follow, not having investment. It's easier to quit, you know, get rid of the training team, get rid of the learning team, get rid of the HR team when we've got to make budget cuts and all of that institutional knowledge disappears. Get rid of the experienced older school managers who've got the institutional knowledge and have, you know, they're not running to try and do the job, so they're focusing more on the people. Getting rid of the leaders who focus on people, not productivity. We get rid of all those people and we'll end up with this issue where we've got leaders who are underskilled, who've then, since the pandemic, been put under extra pressure because they now have to lead people in an entirely new context, which is through a screen or in a hybrid workplace or virtually. And what we see is a lot of the issues with the people returning to work is people are very happy to say, well, I've learned how to do my job from home. I want to do it at home now. I want to do it from a co-working space. I want to do it from a cafe. But the leader can do their job. Well, the manager, should I say, can do their job, but they're not capable of the leadership bit in the new context. Mm-hmm. So they don't know how to lead virtually because nobody's ever had to do that before. It's an entirely new skill. And even when we teach management and leadership, most providers still teach management when people are in the room with you. You know, management by walking around, go and have a one-to-one conversation with them, take them for a walk, get in a room and have a 15-minute catch-up, do WIP meetings, you know, all these things that they're old school, they're outdated. And so these are some of the things that we're seeing as real trend challenges for leaders who are underskilled, undertrained, unprepared, not because they're bad people, but because they haven't had the facilities provided to them to update their skill sets for the new world, new workplace context.
Right.
So that would be the first one. The second one is probably no time in history before now we've had five generations in the workforce. Yeah. And this multi-generational workforce all have different motivating factors, different requirements, different characteristics. And so as a leader who, again, hasn't been through constant professional development, maybe you're thinking, I don't know how to deal with these new kids. You know, these Gen Z kids who are now joining the workplace, they're like a foreign beast. They speak a different language. They're always on three devices at the same time, and they've got these ideas that just seem to be really, you know, precocious. But the reality is that's their generation, and we have to adapt. But we're not able to adapt because we haven't got the leadership skill. So they're probably the two big trends that we've seen, is the challenge of the complexity of leadership without good example and the multi-generational workforce without professional development.
Yeah, those are two consistent themes and challenges that we hear over and over as well, and that the leaders that we talk with are experiencing too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that it's a new day and time, right? And then I think there's also, you know, the fact too that a lot of great leadership was lost as well when the pandemic struck and people made different choices, right? A lot of great leaders mm-hmm. retired. A lot of great leaders left the workforce. So where there were good role models or exceptional role models, now there's just new leaders, right, who really don't have anybody to role model for them, right, on top of not having adequate training and resources to support them to learn and grow in a more formal way. Mm-hmm. They don't have a role model to look up to that can show them the way either.
Right.
So that's another
You're so
trend.
Right. And I don't know if you've seen it. Let me ask you the question. Is that a lot of teams whose leader was appointed during COVID are operating still on pretty shaky foundations? They didn't do the team formation, the get to know each other, the dynamic stuff. They just went into operational delivery to sprint. Have you seen the same thing?
Oh, yeah, yes. Sure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Kind of the command and control. Yeah. Right. Yeah. 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 That as well. So, well, it's just been wonderful talking with you. And now we're on to kind of our mystery questions, Jimmy. So here we go. This is the part where everybody gets nervous, but
my palms are sweating as we speak.
It's nothing to worry about. This is just a way for our listeners to get to know their true you, a little bit of the personal side. So nothing too difficult coming here, but I'm going to start us off. And so the first question is, how many countries have you lived in and which one is your favorite?
Lived in would be 12. And my favorite, I would say, is where I live currently, which is in Mexico. I have a huge love affair with this country. It's got every country has good stuff and bad stuff. But for living, I think Mexico is extremely livable and extremely enjoyable to create a little home away from home.
Nice.
Oh, that's wonderful.
That is.
Good for you. It's good to be in a place that you love that much.
Okay, and our second question that we want to know is, what do you do to relax, you know, when you want to low perform and enjoy that downtime? What do you like to do to relax, Jimmy?
I probably have four things that are how I prepare to perform. The first one is I love to cook. I love cooking for my family. I love cooking dinner parties and hosting. I wish we could do more. We have a new baby, so it's not so frequent as it used to be. But it's something that I've always found is for me, it's the exploration. It's the curiosity of, let's just throw some stuff in a pan and see what happens. And I've been doing that for many, many years. I was very lucky to have cooking classes in various countries and wonderful parents who taught me to cook as a child. So it's one of my great passions. And I find the creative side helps me to occupy what's called my default mode network, which is one of the TV channels in your brain that allows my executive functioning part of my brain to recover. So that's really great. I love also to do workouts. So I'm part of a gym called F45, where basically you go in and you go as hard as you can for 45 minutes and then you walk out. And extremely high intensity. So that's really good for sort of stress and aggression and frustrations. You can get all that out there. And then the other two activities I do are both quite similar. The first one is scuba diving. Mm-hmm. I've been a passionate scuba diver since I was about 10 years old. And in the last 10 years, I've really kind of dialed that up. So I did my instructor's qualification. I don't like to teach, but I do like to dive with good divers. And I try and dive as frequently as I can. And for me, diving is twofold. It's the exploration of the ocean, but also it's the calm and serenity of being underwater, not able to speak, just breathing slowly, watching fish and turtles and whatever. And it really is my happy place, just going underwater. And there's some physiological effects from things like the mammalian water reflex. And so this good for your breathing, good for your heart rate, good for everything, but it's beautiful. And when I can't dive, I like to meditate. And I've gone back to meditation this year as just something to, again, help calm the whirring mind. Yeah. As you probably detected, I'm quite high energy and quite passionate and driven. And so I need that balance to be able to just reset and reflect on what's going on. So I found meditation is very similar to being underwater. Being underwater is breath work. Mm-hmm. Meditation is also is essentially counting breaths.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Great. Well, there you go, listeners. Now you have a downtime framework.
Something to choose from, right? A whole list to choose from. That's wonderful. It is. Well, that's really great, you know. Yeah. And you're very clear on the purpose each of those, has in your downtime. So that's really great. I love that. And thanks so much for coming on and sharing the framework that's in your book and talking about kind of the trends that you're seeing. I think, again, a lot of what you're seeing, we're seeing as well. So this is pervasive. It doesn't matter what country you're in, doesn't matter what industry you're in. I think it's everywhere. And I really appreciate what you're doing and what you're trying to bring. So thanks for being on the show.
Yeah. Thank you, Jimmy. I love your background and just kind of as he looks behind him. No, and just the richness that it brings into the work that you're doing now, and that that certainty and curiosity. I think they're both really present in the work that you're doing. So, yeah, it's been a delightful interview, and thank you very much for being here. Is there any closing remarks or comments that you would like to make for our listeners?
I guess what we like to show as much value as we can in the work that we do. So obviously, please do make sure that you are subscribing and listening to this podcast. We also have a podcast, if anybody's interested, to hop over there, called the High Performance Leader Podcast, essentially telling stories much like this. And we often invite guests. The other thing I wanted to offer to all of your guests is our second book. We're releasing in the next few days.
Oh.
It's called Escape the Multitasking Trap. And if you go to jimmyburrows.com and just click the books button, you can download a copy of that for free. We want to give it away. And anybody who downloads it also gets an invitation to an exclusive leadership training that we're offering later in, well, I think in a few weeks' time. So, yeah, we wanted to make sure that all of your listeners had access to that before we put it on Amazon and start selling it. We're going to give it away for a while because we think that's important.
Yeah, that's great.
Oh, that is great.
That's wonderful. We'll make sure we have the links and all the ways that people can connect with you in our show notes as well. And so, yeah, it's just been really wonderful interview. We're so glad you agreed to come on the show. And thank you for sharing your wisdom and knowledge with our listeners. And
yeah, and thanks to our listeners, because we know, as you know, as a fellow podcaster, we really appreciate our listeners. And to our listeners, if you enjoyed our interview with Jimmy, you know, please share it with others. Leave a review on at your favorite podcast platform. Please subscribe to our podcast as well, so that you can make sure you can hear every single episode. And if you prefer to see our brick wall studio and Tracy and I in action, then follow us on our Missing Logic YouTube channel as well. So thank you so much for being with us. And until next time, stay safe and stay healthy.